Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin's Eyes Look at a very busy week in the Capitol. But as always, wish I was there. Associate Supreme Court Justice Elena Kagan. And then you had, what does a 10-minute speech in the Assembly cost? And what promises did billionaire John Menard make to a woman who worked for him? And the last segment, Speaker Voss, Assembly Speaker Voss says the Assembly will not be held hostage. Wish I was there.
The second thing that Junior Justice has to do is open the door. Can I tell you how seriously people feel as though this is the job of the Junior Justice? This is the best way I can describe it to you. Earlier this year, I tore something in my foot, and I was walking around with one of these boots, you know? And still, somebody would knock on the door, and everybody would just look at me, you know?
The gentlewoman from the 76th said, it's too bad we don't track our hours. So I did the math on that, you can imagine. Something I would do. So I did the math on that, and her diatribe for 18 minutes and 22 seconds cost this body $2,619.87. I thought she'd find that fascinating.
But their allegation in this case was that John Menard invited her to move into his house, which is disputed. That she did so, he asked her to provide her legal and business services to all of his businesses.
By John Menard's own undisputed testimony, he believed that Deborah Sands and her sister were in a conspiracy against him.
I'll cut right to the chase. I'm running for governor. We have got to have a government that works for all of us, not just a wealthy and well-connected and privileged few. We've got to have a government that works for all of us, no matter where you live in the state of Wisconsin.
I can tell you that almost with one voice, the people of the 25th Senate District, which I represent, the largest and the furthest north, the most isolated, they believe that rather than spending $3 billion Wisconsin taxpayer dollars and sending it overseas, we need to protect the taxpayers themselves and prioritize funding for Wisconsin roads, bridges, and schools.
And despite the additional 2.5 months to work on this issue, we are no closer to being able to address the fact that we rely too much on transportation debt service, that we're delaying projects that will cost more in the future, and that we will spend money on maintaining roads that should have been fixed a long time ago.
The great thing about the way Wisconsin does our budgeting system is we're unique in the country, where we in essence have a conference committee throughout the entire process. That's why in the Assembly we have our budget buddy system, where the members of Joint Finance work with about a dozen members each to ensure that all of our concerns are heard and they're all brought through the process. The Senate uses the exact same process. As we have sat and negotiated, we have said Senator X would like to have this, or Representative Y would like to have that. But wholesale changes where somebody says, geez, I got all kinds of things throughout the process and now I want one more thing to vote yes, that's not how our process works, and we're not going to be held hostage.
Thanks to those of you who are taking a break from watching Wisconsin Eye live coverage of the State Senate debate on the budget. JR, that's what we got to talk about first. Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about this week. We'll get to Foxconn. Foxconn mm-hmm. on Tuesday in the Senate.
Yep.
Wednesday, state budget in yes. the Assembly. Thursday, Foxconn, final approval in the Assembly. Mm-hmm. Today, they open debate on the budget at about 12:30 in the Senate. Mm-hmm. Four conservative senators held the key when the day started. What's happened since then? Because I know you talked to Majority Leader Fitzgerald before we went on the air.
Fitz says he got the votes. That means at least 17. The question is, what do they have to get there? Now, if you look at the parameters of what Robin Voss said was, we're not coming back in the Assembly. So that pushes you logically toward, that must mean veto promises from the governor. The question is, well, what could they be? You can look at things like, for example, three of these guys, Senators Kapinga, Nass, and Strobel, put out a list of demands essentially this yes. week of what they wanted to see out of the budget.
The changes they wanted to
make. Yes. And I talked to all three of them after it came out, and they said, we don't need everything, but we need at least some things to get us there. Yes, we're not going to say like what the line is, like, I get four, then I'm okay, or five. Yeah. But at least something to make this budget better. One thing in there was moving the prevailing wage repeal. So we repealed the prevailing wage
moving it up
on local projects 2 years ago. This provision in the budget would repeal it on state projects starting, I believe, September 1st of 2018. Mm-hmm. They put in their list of demands, go to January 1 of 2018. Well, we both know that Governor Walker has the most powerful veto pen in the country. So could he, for example, just using as an example, somehow rewrite that section of that budget to move up prevailing wage repeal even sooner? So that's one thing you look at. But, you know, right now as we sit here, like 1 o'clock on Friday afternoon, it does not, I don't get the vibe that they want to send this bill back to the Assembly because that's going to delay it. That's going to elongate the standoff. Voss has said we're not coming back. It's an uncertainty, so it looks more like vetoes to get this thing across the finish
line. I'm curious, JR, because three of the four conservative senators, they need it. They're in their first terms. So do we have the a little bit of the rebellion of the first-termers here?
Well, it's fascinating. We've talked about the leadership style.
Scott Fitzgerald. Craig Kapinga, first terms.
The leadership style of Scott Fitzgerald has been to basically let his caucus find center, then he closes the deal. And part of it's out of necessity. He's got a very diverse caucus in terms of the right of center to right spectrum, right? So what do you do? He can't really drag them across the finish line. Like Robin Voss of his caucus, it's a much different story. He kind of says, all right, here's what we're going to do. Gets buy-in, but if you cross me, like Andre Jacques, you're going to feel my wrath. I will penalize you.
Yeah.
Scott Fitzgerald's in a more difficult position because where Robin can lose, he's what, at 64?
Yes.
They can lose 14 and get them passed. Fitz can lose 3, and he's got 20. Fitz is at a different situation. Well, you're seeing the kind of the culmination of that not pulling but trying to enable leadership style where now you have these three. And, you know, Dave Craig's in there as well who said basically he's a no pretty much no matter what. Now, barring a miraculous cut in spending, Dave Craig's going to vote no in this budget. But these three are in some ways emboldened because, well, they need us. So now I'm going to make this demand of what I want. Now, they would say, I have said that, look, we've raised these issues before. Some of these things were in our, you know, Senate GOP budget. They put out July 18th, so it shouldn't be a surprise. But here we are at the 11th hour, and they put a list of demands. And there are people who are going, this caucus is just not operating the way it should to get something done.
If I were a betting man, JR, I would not bet against Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald. This is the umpty-two time that we've seen him stitch together the support after saying, I don't have the votes. And he probably didn't. But then he stitches together. So it's a curious, slow, painstaking, but effective management style. Agree?
Sometimes it's not necessarily efficient. And here's a time when what you're thinking about, think about you have 132 lawmakers, you have 64 Republicans in the Assembly, 20 in the Senate. Do you really want to have three senators negotiating with Robin Voss? So this is the downside of that. I mean, and again, I'm not saying there's another way to do it for Fitz because of the dynamic he has. But what's missing that caucus from talking to people this week is a deal maker. We bring up Mike Ellis, you know, kind of a blast from the past, who was somebody who loved the art of the deal. He loved to try and reach a compromise. He loved to work the phones and, you know, tell you things as he got there. There isn't that sense right now in the Capitol of there being a deal maker. It's not about compromise or finding a deal. It's about winning right now. And more about imposing, well, this is our view. We want this kind of thing versus the, okay, how do we work this out?
But you and I are betting that within a few hours, okay, by midnight, Fitzgerald is going to have a budget on the governor's desk, don't you think?
So in the end, it worked. It looks like it's going to work.
Yeah.
But it's the efficiency of the process that has kind of given people some pause about this is the kind of culmination of that style. And again, not that Fitzgerald could do something different because it's the dynamic that he has in his caucus.
Yeah. Okay, now let's talk about the Assembly. About 11 hours of debate, no major changes, 57-39, yeah, five.
The technical amendment that pulled out a provision benefiting members.
A freshman who would have gotten some type of train.
Railroad crossing or something like
on
that.
On his own street or in his neighborhood.
Yeah.
Oops, that was an oops.
Technical amendment.
Okay, so you had all Democrats and five Republican reps, Allen, Branchin, Gannon, Jarko, Sanfilippo. Any rhyme or reason to the opposition? Sanfilippo, of course, is the I-94 East-West wasn't in there.
Yes, he actually put out some ideas like a week or two before the final votes about how to finance it, but they said no, and actually this budget says you can't enumerate 94 East-West. Jarko has been a no since the budget introduced because it added additional tax collectors. Auditors go out and, you know, look at business returns. He's been a no ever since then. Allen, for example,
like bonding authority,
public finance authority, which is a something created in the last decade or so that allowed, the counties to create this finance authority. That was one of his issues. So they've got their own pieces of problems with it. But in the end, again, when Robin's at 64, you can lose five and be fine.
You really can. Let's listen to a couple of minutes of assembly debate on the budget from Wednesday.
Here we are, 2.5 months late, and the one thing we know for sure is that there will not be one Democrat that will vote for this budget. Now, I know there'll be some Republicans will vote against it, because it certainly isn't unanimity on your side. As a matter of fact, we don't even know if the Senate can pass this budget, it's so bad.
Another perfect example, 82 pages. I got a chance to click on it just a couple minutes ago when it finally popped up my computer, and we're supposed to have an actual discussion on debate or something we've never read. Now, I'm not on joint finance. Maybe some of these issues went through joint finance, but don't sit here and say you honestly think we're going to pass something we haven't read.
People say, well, we're going to improve the education of the poor kids in the Racine. But nobody is willing to have a uniform testing of voucher schools and public schools. They're not willing to have those comparisons. We don't know what those voucher schools do. But we do know this, that when you take the white community out of a school district, you are going to see increased segregation, and you are going to see additional white flight.
The gentleman from the 12th just made a case where he is throwing around terms like racist and segregation. It was frustrating to me because I guess I thought at first he was talking about his own opposition and those on the left to school choice, where an awful lot of children get to escape a school that is failing them and their families, primarily children of color. But unfortunately, there are still far too many kids who are left behind in Racine Unified who consistently see a graduation rate that is embarrassing for children of color. We see kids who are in poverty not succeeding, going to college, getting the careers that they deserve. So trying something different to people who protect the status quo, I understand why that's scary, which is why you have fought so hard against school choice. You fought originally so hard against open enrollment. You have fought against every major educational reform in the state's history. And that is shocking to me for people who keep telling us how much they love public education.
JR, the Foxconn deal is on the governor's desk. Mm-hmm. It's still absolutely amazing. You know, we've only got a few decades in the Capitol. I've never seen anything like it. $2.85 billion over 15 years, potentially. Mm-hmm. And some of the numbers, $10 million investment. Do you know all manufacturing property in Wisconsin is assessed at $14.3 billion? And this a $10 billion would be a 69% increase. That just intrigues me. Okay, but let's talk about the Senate vote. Mm-hmm. Democrats wanted to put pressure on Bob Wirch of Kenosha to vote against it. I had an Assembly Democrat tell me we're working really hard on Wirch. He voted for it. Coles voted no. Your impressions of the Senate debate?
Wirch has got this base in his backyard. Talked about manufacturing jobs, how they're important in Wisconsin, but particularly in his area. Kenosha was at one time a major manufacturing city, right?
The AMC.
All those cars. I've got family worked there. That's gone. So this is a chance to bring some of those jobs back, albeit a different kind of manufacturing. So no surprise, much like in the Assembly, the three Democrats who voted the first time for it were all from Kenosha or Racine. Rob Coles, the no vote from Republicans, just had too many questions about the bill as it stands right now. He said he had faith in the Walker administration to negotiate the best deal possible, but too many questions to go for it in the end.
Okay, let's listen to a little bit of Senate debate. Frank Lissay says, if Foxconn doesn't invest anything, they get nothing. If they don't hire anybody, they don't get anything. But Senator Chris Larson says they're not coming for our cheese. Let's listen to a little bit of the Senate debate on the Foxconn deal.
They're not moving here for our cheese. They're not moving here because they like us. They're moving here because they smelled desperation in the air in the political environment, and they saw a governor who was willing to turn over everything in hopes that curtain number two would somehow save his political career.
The fact is, this legislation does not pay anything out until Foxconn invests in Wisconsin. If Foxconn doesn't hire a single person in Wisconsin, we will not be providing any money to them. If Foxconn does not put capital investment money into Wisconsin, We will not, as a state, be giving them any money.
I can't understand how such a big deal that gives away so much can be negotiated by so few, and it's going to fly through this legislature.
JR, before the state Senate took it up, the city of Kenosha withdrew. How big a deal was that? Because it does say that this, if there is a Foxconn plant, it's going to be in Racine County.
Well, there were some indications ahead of them pulling out that they weren't going to get it anyway. So was it to save face? Really, were they pulling out? And true, were they really can't at the end? But it looks like it's going to be in Racine County now. So there's that. Kind of the big question going forward about this is you have this opportunity to reshape Wisconsin's economy. You also have this risk of it being a drain on taxpayers. Yep. Which way is it going to play out? What will be interesting to watch is the immediate future between now, I'm talking about now and next November, because if there are shovels in the ground, if there are people being hired, if there are buildings going up, that you think would help Governor Walker and the backers.
A lot of campaign ads for Republicans.
If there are things aren't going well, if things aren't taking off, if they're, you know, they someone picked a slight, for example, we thought it was going to be like, it was like imminent, you know, a month or so ago. If there are delays, if there are problems, that gives fodder to the critics. The problem for critics is we won't know this thing actually worst case scenario collapses for how long? 10, 15 years? So it's hard to know exactly what's going to happen or how it plays out politically. But in the immediate, I'm watching, do we see, you know, shovels in the ground, job people being hired?
Yes.
That will be the positive that people who backed it are looking for next fall.
One of the inside dramas from the assembly that I really found fascinating was you had Bob Gannon, you know, the conservative firebrand, stand up and say, how can you vote against this, Milwaukee Democrats, because it's jobs for your largely minority residents? And that challenge, he just laid down the gauntlet and said, I'm going to have trouble going to my caucus and asking for some of these child care aides, et cetera, when you Milwaukee Democrats won't vote for a package that could give some of your constituents jobs. And that's why it was so intriguing when Jason Fields, who we'll see in a moment. So that was I found it a very intriguing debate within the larger debate, challenging the Milwaukee Democrats, but the score was, I think 9 Assembly Milwaukee Democrats no, and only Jason Fields yes.
And the question Milwaukee Democrats is, well, where's the bus line from downtown Milwaukee or the north side to Racine County? Where's the Regional Transit Authority to produce light rail? Where's the transportation to get people from this impoverished area to these possible jobs? That's an issue they had with what he was saying.
Yeah. Now let's go to some assembly clips from that debate where we talk about jobs for inner city Milwaukee residents. And the issue of segregation is raised by Democratic Representative Fred Kessler, talking about a potential breakup of the Racine Unified School District. Mr. Kessler is answered by the speaker. Let's listen to a little bit of the assembly debate.
Mr. Speaker, as a young boy, I learned that you use garlic to ward off vampires. Remember about that garlic and how garlic keeps vampires away? I'm gonna do what I can to do the secret recipe to ward off poverty, and it's called good paying jobs. It eliminates poverty every time it's tried.
I wanna make sure that there's training and jobs and positions for African American men. And they all looked at me, and these are people who've never lied to me, and said, you know what, you have our word. So, the reason why I'm yes on this stuff is not because I disagree with people who disagree with it or that I'm totally on board with people who vote for it, but it's about leadership, legacy, and looking myself in the mirror. And if I get up here and don't take the opportunity to advocate and fight for African-American men, then what the hell am I doing?
But it sure seems to me that it makes a lot more sense to build those local communities on a statewide level than putting all of our eggs in one basket.
This is a false choice between job creation and a corporate giveaway. And this is a false choice of saying that we're going to help all the black people that can't get access to jobs. And at the end of the day, for me, trickle-down economics just doesn't work.
And is this facility in my district? No. Are some of my constituents going to get these jobs? God, I hope so. I don't care if this thing was going to be located in Lake Geneva or Kenosha or Racine or Rhinelander. I don't care where it's going to be located. I would be voting for this. Take the political stuff out of this and just look at it. And if you believe that this is going to be good for the state like I do, then please, everyone, join me, support this bill. Let's pass it. and let's get this thing built. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Yeah, I just want to read some of the responses. They're very predictable to the Foxconn vote. The company issued a statement. We thank lawmakers for their endorsement of this project to bring our state-of-the-art advanced display manufacturing campus and thousands of jobs to Wisconsin. The governor said opens a door for 13,000 good-paying family-supporting jobs. This project will benefit our entire state with tens of thousands of direct, indirect, and construction jobs. The bill is an amazing win for the people of Wisconsin. Senator Lena Taylor does not agree. Calling it even more shameful is the rigged playing field against Wisconsin businesses in favor of a foreign company with a history of discriminatory hiring practices against women and the disabled, worker mistreatment, and a lack of diversity. Very predictable responses, right? And yeah. He wants to sign this pretty quick, doesn't he?
Oh, absolutely. One post note, we talked about polling from public policy polling a couple weeks ago in some Senate districts. The Wisconsin Alliance for Reform, a conservative group, released some polling to us this week that plenty of plurality of people support the project. Now, like the caveats I offered with the PPP poll of, you know, it's automated poll, that stuff, this we don't know like what they asked before they asked those questions. But it shows that it's not the grand slam. Governor Walker's words, he first portrayed it as, people have some concerns. But the sole plurality, the backers are hoping that over time, those numbers will go up. For the detractors, like, well, there's a risk. And will this play out for people? Will this be a winner in the end for taxpayers? They have their doubts.
You expect him to sign it next week?
As soon as he can get back and get pen on paper.
Coming back from the trade South mission Korea. To South Korea and Japan.
He's also got September 30th deadline. If you have this done, they still have to work out some final details of the contract before it's all ready to go.
Right. We still don't know the site, but probably Racine County. Okay. Mike McCabe goes to the Curtis County farm on which he was raised and announces as a Democrat for governor. He led the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign for 15 years. Then after he left that, he wrote Blue Jeans in High Places. He founded Blue Jean Nation for the politically homeless. He will only accept donations of up to $200.
Maximum $1,000 per donor.
Yep. He said this when he was asked, are you a Democrat? I belong to no political party, but then in the course of his speech it says, it was David who defeated Goliath, it was David who brought down the giant. Assess for me how big of a factor Mike McCabe's going to be.
In talking to people this week, Republicans don't seem a serious threat to Governor Walker. He may have some kind of lane with the base, Democratic base, in terms of like eschewing money, you know, but it's kind of like a Sanders-esque message, right? I'm not a Democrat, but this is the way to run, is to be a Democrat. But I, you know, knock both houses. The problem is he doesn't have Bernie Sanders' national fundraising network, right? Yeah. So Sanders was fueled by small-dollar donations that gave him this platform to do these things. I don't get the impression from folks that Mike McCabe has that same opportunity, fundraising-wise. Interesting to see is how does he affect, like, a Kathleen Beinhout, for example? We're talked about these kind of tiers in the race right now. We have Gronick, Walks, and Evers is the top tier.
Yes.
We have this other kind of pool of candidates. Beinhout's not in yet. We think she's going to get in. Others are looking at it. So the second tier can maybe break through that top tier. And you look, kind of, talk about lanes in races. You know, we have a very crowded race. So what lane does Mike McCabe have? Well, Mike McCabe and Kathleen Beinhout might occupy above the same lane.
The populist lane.
The populist, the grassroots, you know, kind of appeal. So that might kind of eat into each other's potential support. So it'll be interesting to watch how that goes. Non-traditional candidate, maybe that's what some people are looking for, but as far as somebody that I think he's going to be in the top three for the nomination, you know, or like within striking his nomination come August of next year, I'm not getting that pressure right now.
But as somebody who read Blue Jean Nation and has interviewed Mike about it, his comments there of trashing both parties, and I'm just intrigued by him running as a Democrat. And what he said at the press conference was he's a Democrat, quote, because it offers the biggest opportunity to make significant change.
And remember, it's open primary system in Wisconsin. You don't have to be a Democrat to vote in the primary. So that might bring some people in. But am I thinking like 10%-ish? Probably. You know, that's the numbers that I'm hearing from people, that neck of the woods right now.
Okay. Now let's talk about some political odds and ends. It's intriguing to me that the Assembly Democrats are going to have entirely new leadership elections. Mm-hmm. The odds are that Gordon Hintz is going to be the new Assembly Democratic leader.
Haven't anybody against him yet, so
right.
He's a clear path.
But now Representative Joe Kasich-Zamarripa is challenging Representative Diane Hesselbein of Madison for assistant leader. So are they going to have challenges all the way up and down the line?
Good question. This is not the traditional way we do things in Wisconsin in terms of like leadership elections. Usually it's like after the November election, they get together a few days later, and they have a slate of elections. They go everything, you know, from caucus leader on down.
for the whole session, yes. For the 2 years.
Here, you have one position open. Now, caucus...
You're replacing the engine while the car is running.
The caucus rules aren't like... They're not like in the legislature's handbook, you know. So, in theory, in a caucus, you can have anybody say, well, I want a motion to open the election for position A.
Yes.
That looks like the path for Jocasta with Diane, that somebody will put a motion forward to have an election there. What's been interesting to talk to you this week about this situation is that Gordon Hintz seems to be unopposed right now for minority leader. Some people talked about it. Nobody really stepped forward. There's like this kind of like post-Peter kind of like, okay, now what feeling. Because there are definitely critics of Peter Barca's who are part of this engineering pushing him out. They got that done. Now the reality of like Gordon Hintz as possible leader sets
in. He's got to play offense.
So he's got to raise money. He's got to recruit candidates. And he's got to have a coherent message and get the people in the caucus right in that message.
And he's got to delegate, which was one of the criticisms of Peter Barca. He's got to delegate.
Well, part of that is because Peter was very good at making sure he stayed minority leader. And so if you don't give too many pieces out, it kind of helps you keep the keys.
Okay.
But anyway, with Gordon, there's also baggage. There's the massage parlor incident in 2011.
The citation.
Shouting, you're bleeping dead at a female GOP colleague.
Michelle Lichens, who, by the way, is marrying the speaker in a couple weeks.
So after he announced he's going to run for minority leader, the state GOP put out a statement calling him a sleazy politician, his own personal war on women. Jim Steinke, the Assembly Majority Leader, said, don't do that. Like, this is not what we need.
Okay.
Even though he got that kind of rebuke from Steinke, I can promise you in mail next November, assuming that Gordon is the minority leader, there will be vulnerable candidates on the Democratic side who will be tied to these things. Okay. That's the way politics work.
Sure.
So that's an issue. Also, the Jocasta-Diane thing, when I talk to people, it's not necessarily that people aren't happy with Diane. It's a trust issue in that caucus right now of people weren't happy about how Peter was treated, the pro-Peter crowd. And so now there's this kind of like a trust issue. And so that's our issue for Gordon is leading a caucus that has still got some raw feelings. And oh, by the way, the guy you pushed out is somebody in the caucus.
One other note in passing. Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald didn't surprise anybody by saying he wasn't going to run for the U.S. Senate, endorsing Leah Vukmir. Okay, stock report, rising.
So Michael Gabelin, when he announced he was going to seek re-election, we all thought, okay, what's he going to get? And by that I mean that where was he going to land? Because you usually don't have somebody announced like that who was going to look for a run for election. The assumption was he'll get a job in the Trump administration, a Walker appointment or something that would get him another job that pays him decently, which will allow Scott Walker to make an appointment then to fill his seat.
As was done with Justice Rebecca Bradley.
Well, that was a little bit different because remember Pat Crooks passed away and she got that appointment. But this one, Gabelin's being vetted for a job in the Trump administration. Now, my source told me he's not a judgeship, won't say what it is other than that, but he's looking like he's got that landing spot. Now, that means that Michael Schrank, the Sauk County judge, who's running as a conservative
Walker
candidate,
aide.
He now has the opportunity, if Walker wants to, Walker to appoint him to the bench, which would then give him the advantage of incumbency in that election. Now, let's add some caveats. Getting a job in the Trump administration is not always easy or smooth. See Michael Sheriff Clark, David Clark. So it could take a while, too. So how does that all play out? But if it plays out, he gets the job, which would be good for him because, by the way, he's not like, 70 years old leaving the court. He's still got a few years ahead of his career.
Right.
Finding six-figure jobs for a former judge is not really easy, so this might be a nice soft landing for him. Good for him. Also, opportunity for Schrank to get on the court, which then changes the dynamic a little bit of that race, although I think the Burns and Dalek campaigns had operated on thinking, well, something's going to happen before this is all over anyway. So they were preparing for this all along.
Okay, mixed.
So Tammy Baldwin, Senator Baldwin is not known as a risk taker, right? But here she is embracing the Bernie Sanders Medicare for All bill, becoming a co-sponsor a year and 2 months out from her election. It's interesting because on the one hand, Tammy Baldwin is going to get hit about health care no matter what, right? Because she voted for Obamacare. That's been a big issue for Republicans. They're going to nail her on that. She has run before supporting health, a single-payer system. So on the one hand, there's a risk. The taxes to pay for this system, how much is it going to cost? Same time, Tammy Baldwin really believes in a single-payer system. Why not embrace it, right? Be authentic. You're going to get the hits anyway, but be authentic on the issue. Embrace it. There's also a big set of the base that's interested in this and also draws a very big contrast to Kevin Nicholson and Leah Vukmir, who are two announced opponents right now, because they want to obviously end Obamacare. There's a big difference there, and races are about drawing contrast. It's a good for. So in some ways, It's a very smart political move, but it also carries a great deal of risk about the ads she's going to see next fall. About
oh, yeah, this. It's going to dominate the campaign next year. Falling.
The Obamacare Navigators, this is no shock. But
Navigators are people that help organizations that help people enroll in Obamacare. Excuse me.
They're losing money. We kind of knew this was going to happen because President Trump is obviously looking at things to do with the Affordable Care Act. He's not happy with it still being around. I think one of the Navigators in Wisconsin is losing like 40% of their funding, so it's going to make their jobs more difficult to find people getting hooked up with Obamacare.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for September 15th. Now you can go back to watching Wisconsinite live coverage of the Senate debate on the next state budget.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.